Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, lightning, antagonist, banter, and much, much more. Eric's next to me today, and there's a cat trying to drink his water.
Cat water.
Yeah, there's two cats in the room. One is sleeping, and one is,
Well, she's pretending to sleep.
She'll be asleep.
Good.
Minutes.
Right now, she's just looking angrily at you.
She does that a lot.
She doesn't have any other look.
She's like, why are you making noises? I'm trying to sleep. Yeah, can't you tell? Look at me. My head's down.
This is where I've decided to sleep, human. Exactly. Fuck off.
Exactly. So, yeah, Eric came down, to South Florida this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Just couldn't stay away from you.
Yeah. We ate some terrible ribs.
We're going to eat some good ones later.
Yeah. They cannot
be worse.
I think it, like, theoretically, you can make worse ribs.
I
don't think they're going to be worse.
No, they're already in raw form better than the ribs that we had yesterday. And I think it would be a cruel thing to mention
the name
establishment in question.
But we won't be going back.
No.
We'll be trying out the Iron Maiden drummer's ribs next. Maybe they'll be better.
I can sincerely hope so.
Yeah.
Seems like, you know, you could make some tender cuts of meat with all that beating up the skins. That's what they call it.
That is what they call it.
You seem to think that there's something wrong with saying that.
But just between the motion you were doing and beating up the skin, I mean, it's all kind of very powerful. Like
that?
No, I was going to say.
You're really missing out, gang.
I know. We are, unfortunately, none of these things we're doing, showing each other,
in
the audio medium.
Yes. The whole pantomime portion.
We'll be lost.
Podcast, unfortunately. That's the whole second part of the podcast today.
Yeah, lost in the ether.
Yeah, it's going to be really sad. I think we'll just have to edit it out. We'll fix it in post.
We'll do it.
You know, the engineering staff.
Yes, exactly. Alex, make sure you edit this out.
Alex Vance.
Alex, yeah, he's our editor.
Not the girl from Half-Life.
I don't. We could probably just do this forever, but I think it's time for checking in. Hams. You want to go first, Eric? I've been making you go first for a while.
You love making me go
I do
first.
Like making you go first.
This makes me so uncomfortable. That's your MO. I feel like I'm checking in with, like, the most generic things, because the first thing that I've tested the waters on this week was Dan Carlin's Common Sense, which is really excellent. I've always liked, I really liked his hardcore history and sort of the way he looks at politics sort of in the macro historical sense. I really like his point of view on things, and Common Sense is it just sort of is a little bit deeper in that, and it's more relevant. He talked a lot in this past episode about the whole ISIS thing in Iraq, and about how Iraq is sort of a how it's sort of a false state that, you know, it's three separate factions that all sort of want to go off and do their own thing, and I don't know, it gave me some interesting insight onto that, and I think I'm going to have to become a at least a semi-frequent listener, it is good times.
Yeah, apparently I was reading that he talked a lot about his podcasting, like just the craft, in one of his most recent episodes of that show, which I've been meaning to hunt down because I'd love to see his perspective on.
There's an episode of Podcast 411 that he was interviewed on that was very, very good that I would recommend. But yeah, no, that's where I've learned all these things about him, like that he used to work for Rush Limbaugh's show and all that jazz, and that's where he got his magical radio voice. Because obviously he couldn't speak before he went for Rush Limbaugh.
No, he educates young men on how to speak English.
Rush just with his magical, right hand, and it's his right hand. blessed him with a voice.
It was his right hand.
Yeah, like God himself.
One of my favorite cards against humanity cards. Mm-hmm. Rush Limbaugh's soft, shitty body.
You're gonna say shriveled dick?
No. Soft, shitty body.
It feels more like a Cards Against Humanity thing to always. Like every card is about penises.
You got mixed up a little bit.
It can't be all penis all the time.
Yeah.
The other thing, and I hate that I'm checking into this too, but it's pretty good, is season 2 of The Orange is the New Black. Have you watched any of it?
No. We've watched half of the first episode of the first season, and then we just couldn't get into it. And I mean,
I'm shocked that you didn't fall into it. I thought it was really good.
I'm sure it is, and everyone loves it. I mean, I'm on Tumblr, so of course, all I see is, "Hey, look amazing! We watched all 12, 13 episodes." So
Genji, what is her name? Kenji Hohan? I don't know. She's got a crazy made-up name.
Kenji Hohan.
Whatever the silly person's name is. I don't know. There are some moments where the writing doesn't feel quite right. I don't know. It's the problems that I have with it are a little hard for me to vocalize, I think. I haven't thought too deeply about it. But by and large, it is a truly excellent drama, and it works as a comedy as well. It's really good, and I'm shocked that you haven't gotten into it. Have you watched House of Cards? Also, very, very good.
We haven't watched any. We barely make it through anything. We just eat dinner, and then migrate to computers.
All I do is watch TV and cry. So
okay, but takes all kinds.
I guess so. My tears lubricate the cogs of the great machine that is America. Well, clearly you've just been sitting around all day for the past week listening to this computer fan and nothing else, right?
Well, mostly.
Mostly?
Mostly just my head right up next to the tower. Yeah, no, I have done a few things this week. I've been colossally busy, honestly. But the first thing I want to check in is a book.
Read things.
Well, I listen to it. It's an audiobook.
Okay. So it talks to you.
It does.
I'm getting attacked.
You are. His claws are razor.
Yeah, I have holes in
him. Yeah, I've learned how to avoid those because I had scratches all over me when I first got them. No, the first is a book. It's called Off to Be the Wizard. By Scott Meyer. A little funny, clever title. And I've mentioned this, Eric, before we started recording, because I really think he should. I usually say, Eric, you'd like this. And generally, he probably would like things I like, because we're both similar nerds. Mm. But
I think we talk to each other for a reason.
Yes. This, I think you'd really like. It's really fun, kind of light science fiction comedy. It's about this kid, 23 years old, who knows about computers. Doesn't call himself a hacker, but he's a hacker. He, in his off time from working in a cubicle, he just messes around with computer systems, and he finds a file that is the source code for reality, basically. And if you edit that code, it edits reality. And he finds ways to, like, edit his bank account, which he does in a very stupid way, gets caught, And so he escapes back to medieval England, where he figures is the best time for a wizard, quote unquote, to survive. Because considering he can edit source code, he can be, I'm just a wizard. Like, if you try to do it now, people would, I don't know, you'd probably be dissected by the government.
From what I, yeah, well, from what I understood is the whole premise is really the big struggle to get past, because it's not exactly clever or original, but it's sort of where they go from there.
That's, yeah, that's nice. I want to tell you this next bit because it makes it like you want to read it because you go, oh, that makes it much more interesting, but it's also mm-hmm. kind of a reveal. But I
for me, it doesn't matter as long as there's.
Well, I guessed it before it even happened. By the time he got to, this is a small spoiler. Small spoiler if you want to read this from the beginning and have a complete surprise. But I guessed this the minute he went back to medieval England. But he's not the only person who's found this code and gone back to medieval England.
Okay,
there's more than one other person. And that's the fun.
Okay, cool.
They like a little society.
And they all fucking go back. That's wonderful.
They even talk about, yeah, it's really, it's fun. It does not take itself seriously. It understands it's ridiculous, and that's, it has to be, because if it tried to take itself seriously, you would go, well, this makes no sense. But they're like, we know it makes no sense. We don't care. Just keep going.
First thing you've read by this Scott Meyer guy?
Yeah, I just randomly found it on Audible. It's in their top 50 sci-fi fantasy books.
Very cool.
But it's like $6 if you remember, which is much cheaper than most audiobooks. Most audiobooks are 15,
yeah,
20.
I can get behind a cheap book.
Yeah, and there's a second book currently, which I haven't listed yet, but I'm going to. Another thing I want to check in with is my new podcast, so, The Mistress.
Goodbye, Robbie. Yeah.
No, in addition to, not in replacement of, it is called The Simpsons Show. I was looking on podcast directories and I couldn't find like good Simpsons podcasts. There's no like famous good Simpsons podcasts. And I just,
I want to say, so you decided to make a bad one, but I don't really think that.
Well, yeah, you know, go.
I just want to be an asshole.
And no, we'll make one, not aim for good, but, you know, bad is also an option.
No, I thought you guys did a good job. I did find out about it a little later than I would have liked. I wish you would have told me on the front side, but, you know.
No,
it's definitely good content.
I didn't want to tell you before. I didn't want it to be bad. And then I didn't want to make, like, say, hey, Eric, you know what I'm going to do? And then you're like,
it's fine. I figured you had some reason, but no, it's.
Well, I try to keep it on the DL until it's mm-hmm. actually a thing.
It doesn't seem to be showing up on my Pocket Cast. Really? But I'll test again this morning.
It's on iTunes. Yeah, I know that.
It should be on iTunes. I imagine you'll be eventually rolling it into other venues the way we've done ours.
Yeah, I have a Twitter, I have a Facebook, I have a Tumblr, but it's really, all those places are really just kind of.
So you do it by yourself?
No, I do it with a mutual friend of ours.
Oh, yeah, I do know that person.
He's our
I thought that voice sounded really familiar.
Yeah, he's our DM for our D&D game. The Ham, Matt Ham. Mm,
the Ham.
The Ham.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like us, he is a nerd about The Simpsons. And now I have all my friends going, hey, when are we going to do a podcast about this thing that we have mutual interest in? I'm like,
well, just record every moment of everything you say to everyone.
Apparently.
And put it on the internet.
Kim is already like, she was very aware of me starting a second and a third.
I imagine so.
She's like, I don't know about that, which I'd like to do.
Well, ideas for to more, be fair, but at least you're only making one for every episode of The Simpsons.
Exactly.
There are, like, hardly any.
I know.
There's, like, maybe, what, 15 episodes of The Simpsons?
15 episodes or
so.
So
you'll be done
well,
in, like, no time.
I'm not worried about running out of content.
Yeah.
I could, you know, go on forever. I'll be getting old. It probably will never end, so I will never run out of episodes.
Yeah, you will die.
Having not finished it. Not having a complete run.
Yeah.
But that's, we're at thesimpsonsshow.com, Simpsons Show on iTunes, Simpsons Show. Just Google that. You should find us.
If you don't, you're using Google wrong.
I It's surprising how many people don't know how to operate a simple search engines.
My favorite thing is when you tell someone to, like, go to google.com or something, and then they don't go to the URL bar, they go to Google, and then they Google, and they click on the link to go to Google.
Gotta Google. It's Googleception.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I'm gonna cry.
Don't cry.
I've got to.
Don't be sad, not until we talk about comic books. Now I think it's a good time. We're done checking in. It's time for Weekly Flop News.
Is it Weekly Floppies in that voice?
I don't know. That was the first time I've used that voice, I think.
That was a very floppy voice.
Yeah, it was. I guess it's accurate, honestly. Floppies is the time when Eric and I read the week's books and tell you what we think about them. And tell you if you should buy or do not buy them. Hopefully, we try aim for more buys than do not buys, but it's not always the case.
Sometimes there's a turd in the punch bowl.
Sometimes. Yeah, I can't help it.
A punch turd.
Punch turd. We're going to start off with DC and Justice League number 31. Post Forever Evil Justice League. This is, not, I guess there's like three kind of plots going on in this thing. One is the power ring, the evil Green Lantern ring is trying to find its new host. Bruce Wayne and Lex Luthor are having a little conversation about how Lex knows that he's Batman.
And Cardigan Bruce Wayne kicks the shit out of him.
Yeah, Cardigan Bruce Wayne. I should mention, Jeff Johns, this is Jeff Johns' writer, Doug Mankey doing pencils, Keith Champagne with Christian Alamy doing inks, Rod Reese on colors, and Desi Ciente doing the letters.
Keith Champagne sounds like a rapper.
Keith Champagne. Yeah. Cardigan Bruce Wayne does, like, do, like, a fucking, like, karate kick right in.
It's pretty awesome.
It's pretty cool, yeah.
I want to get myself a cardigan and jump around like that.
Then Shazam and Cyborg are, like...
Shazam is so fucking adorable. He looks like such a doofus.
Yeah, he's they get themselves a ping pong table
with magic.
You get a little bit about Captain Cold. Most of this is Bruce Wayne and Lex Luthor kind of having a show off, and then the Doom Patrol shows up.
That's like so comic booky to just, you know, a bunch of characters show up on the last page. And they're like, this is who I am.
Hey,
that happened announcing us. That happened in like the last DC book we read, where it's like, oh, I'm Fabulous Joffrey, or whatever his name was.
Hey, I'm the...
Yeah, it's so... This was not the worst DC book I've ever read. Like, I actually thought it was relatively palatable.
Yeah.
But I'm just about sick of... things being written in sort of this, I don't know, paradigm, idiom, whatever you want to call it. It's...
Hey, you like comic books? This is a comic book. It looks like a comic book. They write like... I mean, it's just very generic kind of,
I guess, plot structure. So. No, definitely. It definitely is generic, but it's just... I feel like I'm being talked down to, and I don't like that. Yeah, I thought I had the wrong book when I read that. I'm like, wait, why is this in Justice League now?
Yeah. I mean, the Luthor Wayne thing wasn't terrible. It could have been better.
Yeah.
I mean, Cardigan, Bruce Wayne, karate kicking, Luthor is cool.
Alfred pulling a gun on him.
Yeah, Alfred pulls a gun on Luthor. But just overall.
It's forgettable as hell.
Yeah, not, it's, yeah.
It's not the train wreck that I was kind of, I'm beginning to expect from DC. It has some of the earmarks of, like he tells Lex Luthor the Scorpion and the Frog story.
Yeah.
Like he's a one-year-old and doesn't know the damn story. Like these are two of the smartest men in the DC universe. And he's like, I assume you don't know this really well-known story. I mean, I get that there are probably going to be some children that are reading this Batman comic that don't know the story, but Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's not worth purchasing, I would say. The art is the art is good. Yeah, but
it's pretty strong.
Yeah, but it's not worth it buying it for the art alone. So I would say do not buy.
Or is it not worth purchasing? Is that what we're switching it to? Buy and not worth purchasing. Not worth purchasing.
I was just trying to, you know, expand our vocabulary a little bit.
So we've got to go from a fourth to a fifth grade level for vocabulary.
Yeah, I'm a do not buy.
Yeah, it's not wretched, but do not buy it.
No, Justice League 31. Double do not buy. Now, the second book of DC is the much acclaimed debut of J.R.J.R. John Romita Jr.'s in DC Universe. He's never...
I'm really shocked about that. I know it looks really weird to see him drawing Superman.
Yeah, it's very odd.
Yes.
And Geoff Johns writing Superman for the first time, at least in his solo book. And this is a big get for DC. I mean, John Romita Jr. has written, drawn for Marvel for 30 years.
Yeah.
And now this is, and he's debuting on Superman. I'm sure they backed up a dump truck full of money to his house. It's generally how it works. What do you think about this, Eric? And I know you're not a huge fan of John Romita Jr.
Just seeing him in this book was a turnoff, but honestly, I am very intrigued by the sort of... it's not a MacGuffin, but the whole gimmick of this book is it's an alternate world Superman who's from Earth.
Yes.
And the way he's introduced, the look of him, I'm pretty excited to see where this goes. This could be really cool. I mean, it could completely tank almost immediately, but I think it's fun. And I think it could be a really solid book.
No, yeah, I agree. I do like John Romita Jr. I think a lot of it's rooted in that I grew up reading Marvel comics when he was really big. But I really enjoy. I was not worried about his art, so to speak. I figured he would do his best on, especially his first issue with Superman. I was more worried about Geoff Johns.
Yes, I get that.
But
it's not bad or clunky or
grim and gritty. That's really what I was concerned about, the grim and grittiness, which you see a lot of in Justice League, especially. But I should read the credits. Geoff Johns writing, John Romita Jr. pencils. I keep forgetting. Klaus Janson inks, who he does. I think he almost always does John Romita Jr.'s pencils. He always inks it, and he's a great inker. Laura Martin doing colors, another great colorist. And Sal Cipriano doing letters.
No, it's good times.
Yeah, it's very good. The story, they're trying to get Kent back as a worker working for the newspaper, which I'm fine with. I don't really like Clark Kent, independent blogger. That just seems so stupid to me. This alternate Superman, Ulysses, his name, he actually looks a lot like the Sentry. How John Romita Jr. drew the Sentry, which makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
A blonde Superman. It's very interesting. I'm very curious to see where their relationship goes, and I'm fairly certain that'll be the crux of, you know, this story about they're both the last son of a planet, except the last son of Earth is not actually the last son of Earth. But I'm intrigued.
Yeah, a good solid story.
Yeah, I'm a buy.
Totally buy. Yeah,
Superman 32, double buy.
Pleasant surprise.
Yeah, exactly. Find my DC book, double buy. Next up, Trees. Any book of the week. Trees number 2, written by Warren Ellis, art by Jason Howard, with Phonographics doing letters. You were very enthusiastic about the first issue, right?
I was. This one, I enjoyed it, I guess. It moved a little slow.
That's what Ellis said. He's already saying, like, yeah, this is, like, it's set up. He's like, it's going to be, it seems slow, but the third issue it's necessary for the third issue, I guess. I guess
it moves like a tree.
it's a lot more just background stuff on characters, and a lot of it's spent in the Antarctic station where you meet a lot of the kind of people there. You get a little bit of insight in a couple other characters, a couple other places.
This chapter makes me feel like I don't want to follow this month to month. That I don't know that I'm the kind of reader that can sit through a chapter like this where, well, two chapters in a row where basically nothing happens. Like the last one, it was all set up you know, but you expect that from the first book. This is, I don't know. I think I've said everything there is about it. It just feels slow, and I wish I was reading a trade. It doesn't make me not want to read it.
No, I mean, it's not... There's more intriguing things in it about kind of the plant life that seems to be growing out of the trees, and I think that's the most... I do like this kind of the relationship they're building with these people in this Antarctic station.
Yes.
And the politics surrounding, like, the trees and how they've affected the world. They touch on that a little bit. But I think it's the fact that it's divided among these different little factions that are in these different areas, it doesn't give you a lot of any one thing, even though most of it is in these in the Antarctic kind of science station, which just every time it just makes me think of the thing, which I love the thing, so it's not certainly not hurting it. But and all the fact there's a little bit of infighting among all the people there and all that. But it's hard to say. I obviously, if you're not reading the series, if you're not, you haven't read one, and
definitely a terrible place to jump in.
Yeah, you have to just either, you're in for a inch or in for a mile. So I would say I'm a buy. I liked it enough that I would recommend it, but I recommend everything. And I would say that there's nothing wrong with waiting on the trade for this.
This is a book that I would wait on the trade for.
Warren Ellis is, I think he's telling a story he wants to tell. And
Which I think is, I mean, that's one of the things you can go to Warren Ellis for.
Yes, exactly.
I nearly called him Warren Zevon because I am retarded.
Warren Zevon, known comic book writer, Warren Zevon.
Yep, known dead guy.
So that's, I guess we're a split decision on that, or I don't know how Eric wants to frame his...
I mean, I'm a buy for the trade already.
Okay.
But I think you can safely sit this one out unless you're already hooked on book one.
Yeah, if you're going to like, well, I don't care, I'm super... Yeah. I am a hardcore Warren Ellis fan.
Yes.
I will buy anything he writes.
I'm definitely a Warren Ellis fan myself, but I think... Sit it out. I mean, if we're doing trades on Saga,
yes,
which is a book that I am excited about to buy everything, but I would still prefer to read trades.
Yes, I think that's the problem. Saga is so good, that it's painful.
Yes,
to read issue to issue because Brian K. Vaughan's so good at hitting dramatic beats right at the end of an issue. We're gonna jump over to Marvel, Miss Marvel number 5. This is kind of seeing her level up. She even mentioned that. Writer is G. Willow Wilson, Adrian Alfonso doing art, Ian Herring doing colors, and Joe Caramagna doing the letters. Yeah, we see her kind of fail her first fight, and she figures out, hey, I need to be professional. Or as much as a professional as she can be. Which, you know, she needs to train, quote unquote. So you get kind of this funny training montage.
I think this book has the word super snot a little bit more than I would prefer. But that being said, this is... I hope they never stop making this book. It is so good. It is so... I want it to be forever.
Yeah, it's charming and fun. And it's a good superhero... Like, it's a superhero story that I like.
Yeah.
It's not grim and it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend this to a child.
I can't imagine that it's, I can't imagine that it's going to take a turn and get dark.
Yes. I mean, there'll
probably be some dark moments, like something really terrible might happen to Kamala, but I don't think like she's going to like, get raped and have to deal with like that heavy shit.
No,
I sincerely hope that's not the case.
No,
but it is a hell of a story. She's a hell of a character.
Yeah, and the art's really good.
It
really works.
I love Adrian. Oh my god. Oh my god. I followed
this even looks more like Brandon Graham stuff.
Yeah, which is by me.
Yeah,
I think it's a little tighter version of almost Brandon Graham.
Yeah.
Which I enjoy.
Absolutely.
what is the, what's the, her name's Willow something, isn't it?
G. Willow Wilson. Yeah. G. Willow Wilson.
I had to, after reading this, I had to run off and add both of them on my Twitter machine.
Twitter machine?
Yeah.
Makes it, that means it's serious, folks.
Yeah.
Eric does not do that lightly.
I do not. I like this book.
Yeah, it's very, very good. It's the comic book for people like us. So, by extension, people like you. So you should buy this book.
One thing I don't understand is, you know, Tumblr seems to be obsessed with whatever silly hug box thing at the moment. Why aren't they, why isn't this something that's blowing up on Tumblr?
Oh, I mean, if you're in the right comics people, you follow the right comics people, I see it. It's Karakor, the whole Karakor, which they're Captain, they do the whole,
yeah.
And that's Kamala Khor as well. They've kind of co-opted, they're kind of like co-mutual groups because they're both using them, you know, they're both strong female characters.
Mm-hmm.
And not quote-unquote strong female characters, but actually yes. Strong female characters.
Yes. I think that's also one of the reasons, because I'd listened to our old episode where I was all down on Lady Deathstrike. That's the one of the reasons I have such a beef with that trope. Is it's like, let's not put any thought into making this girl an actual fully fleshed out character. Let's just give her karate and she'll beat up a guy once in a while. You know, it was sort of like the 90s version of, let me break a flower pot over your head.
Well, flower pots are always good options.
It's April O'Neil getting one punch in the, I like my women to be real human beings.
What? Get out. That's not acceptable in this house.
Okay, good. That would really hurt.
Yeah, if you couldn't tell, we are a double buy of Ms. Marvel number 5. It's succeeding, which I'm very happy to see.
There need to be, Marvel needs to take more risks like this. And I'm just glad they're a company that can.
Absolutely. Last up, New Avengers number 20, written by Jonathan Hickman, art Valerio Schiti, colors Frank Martin and Paul Mounts, letters Joe Caramagna. This is seeing. I know you haven't been reading all this, have you?
No, I haven't really been keeping up with it.
I don't really need.
No, I'm familiar with the sort of gist of where this has been. I mean, it's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
Basically, this all started before we even started this podcast, and it's still going.
That's Hickman.
Yeah, which is whatever. It's fine.
It's 5-year plans.
Yeah. You know, all that considered, it doesn't really feel all that convoluted. Like, I'm still able to jump in at this point and follow what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
For
those not aware, it's basically, I mean, the Illuminati have been case by case trying to stop these incursion events where Earths are going to collide, so they end up, every other time except for this, they've managed to work a way around nigh having to destroy the Earth, the other Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, there's this other group of superheroes on this alternate Earth that have done the same thing, except they are strong, they've been strong enough to defeat all these aliens and all these otherworldly figures that the Avengers don't even know about necessarily. And now they're coming face to face with our Illuminati, our Avengers. And kind of the end of last issue, Namor's just like, why are we, they were talking and trying to go like, well, what, you know, what should we do? What's the worst case scenario is we have to destroy an Earth. And then Namor just like throws his trident at someone and is like, this is what it's going to come to. Why are we talking? This is stupid. Mm. All of us are very smart people. We are wasting time.
In other words, Namor pulls a Leroy Jenkins.
Exactly. That's who Namor is.
Namor is exactly Leroy Jenkins.
But this is basically a showdown between the two groups of superheroes. And it's pretty interesting fight.
No, I think it's pretty fun.
Yeah, it's an excellent fight scene because these new superheroes are not super familiar, and they're not
really all that boring.
No, they're
interesting.
They have archetypes kind of that are based on like most
that guy's of it. Like the century sort of.
Yeah, exactly. But they're not straightforward. They all have they're written well. Yeah. In which Hickman is, obviously, that's why.
No, he's just terrible writer.
Yeah, he's terrible. But Doctor Strange, basically, he had gone on this, they talk, the very first part of this issue is about Strange selling his soul, or what's left of it. And I've been waiting to see what actually happened there, because it just kind of cut away before you actually saw it.
It's a good tease, I think.
Yeah, it worked very well.
It's got me hooked.
And yeah.
I've been drifting in and out of this
and,
for a while.
Strange, at the end of this, he's like, I've
already made my sacrifice. We're destroying a world, might as well.
Yeah.
And it's pretty intriguing. I'm excited to see what happens. And this is all going to, you probably aren't aware of this, Eric, but in October, I want to say, they're going to jump ahead. Avengers Tales. Hickman's leaving the Avengers after a certain time period, relatively soon.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing a time jump. So all the Avengers books will be 8 months in the future in continuity. They'll be taking place in the universe's future. All the other books be working up towards that future.
That's an interesting device.
Yeah, and then this
basically it's going to jump ahead, show some reveal, and then it's going to
fill
work
in
towards that.
Yeah, we're everything else is going to fill in towards those books.
That's pretty exciting, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. DC has done a similar thing at like 52 and Countdown and all that.
Yeah,
stuff. But I have more trust to Jonathan Hickman than I do with those guys who wrote those books all petered off towards the end as well. Mm-hmm. The fact that Hickman's not telling a story for a year with weekly books, I think will also be helpful. But I really like this book. I've been liking it. I've been reading New Avengers even when we haven't been talking about it on the podcast. And I'm Hickman, Illuminati, Doctor Strange, making deals with Eldritch gods. Super cool. Bye.
This book is well worth your money.
Yeah. It's for how tied it is into continuity.
Yeah.
You could pick it up. I
was surprised at how accessible it was, because even though I am vaguely familiar with what's been going on in these, as I said, fell right into this, hadn't read any of these since we did it for the podcast last, and totally get what's going on.
Yeah.
Very, very quick recap. Fall right in. Excellent.
Yeah. So, double buy, New Avengers number 20. Other books of interest this week. Last issue of Larfleas.
Sad face.
I was going to do the death. I can't even do it, I don't think.
That was not how it goes.
It was noises.
It was certainly noises.
I got that going.
They were sad noises, at least. Oh, there's the superannuated man. Don't read that.
Because Eric and I are sharing our my iPad at the moment.
We're cuddling up to an iPad together.
Oh, the New Avengers Annual. You even asked me about it,
New Avengers,
which is
something.
All about Strange. It's a Doctor Strange story. It's very good. It's a one shot long Doctor Strange story. It's an extra dollar. I would say it's worth it. It's a really good story. The art's cool. It's a lot more. It's delving into kind of Strange's ideology about why he sold his soul or what was left of it, honestly, but about the prices he's willing to pay. Like, that's the central theme of the book is nothing is impossible, but everything has a cost.
Yes.
You can achieve anything if you're willing to pay those costs. So I'd definitely suggest that. I will probably hand it over to Eric to read it when we're done.
While
meat is cooking.
I like reading books for free.
Yeah, those are the best ones. The ones that are free and that are good and free, even better.
Total buy on free comic books.
Free comic books. We're going to jump over with that. Weekly Floppies is over. Eric's a little upset, I can tell. He's crying tears, just running down his face.
I'm not crying tears, I'm crying ketchup.
Ketchup is like getting it just written. That's how you rid it out of your body. Yeah. Just crying out.
Still trying to purge all that ketchup I used to eat.
It's just collected.
It's
your ketchup pouch.
I'm gummed up.
You have like a ketchup organ that holds it up.
A ketchup gland.
That's it. But we're gonna go to Nerd Boy Book Club. Nerd Boy Book Club is a section where Eric and I will decide on a longer form story, and we'll be reading it. We'll give you guys notice. You guys can read along with us. Engage us in discussion.
Please. Begging.
Don't sound so desperate.
We don't need you.
You can if you want. It's cool.
It's okay.
Maybe we won't punch you in the ass.
It's like handing them, like in sixth grade, handing a girl, will you go out with me? Yes, no, maybe?
Maybe. That's a fucking meme.
Maybe. Yes, but this week we're doing Astonishing X-Men, volumes 1-4, the complete run by Joss Whedon and John Cassaday. This book did continue after them, but it was.
But who cares?
It had Warren Ellis wrote it. It was not. Admittedly, not he's not some of his best stuff. It was interesting, but not as good. Nearly as I reread this. We both reread this before.
Yeah,
yeah, and we often rag on Joss Whedon for ruining the Runaways.
And that's the thing. It wasn't a bad arc.
No.
He just what was it? 6 books, and it took him
forever,
a thousand years
to finish it. And when you kill the momentum like that, that's the problem.
Really ruined it. Really, it was Terry Moore that destroyed it. But and, that's fine.
And I don't know. This took a long time for it to end. Last arc, I was reading it as it was coming out the last time I was into comics, and it took a long time. But I think a lot of that also has to do with John Cassaday, who is a good artist, but he, I think he takes his time. He doesn't rush unless he has to, which a lot of the time.
Someone take.
Time to make good art.
Yeah. I don't think that's acceptable.
No.
Anyway, Whedon's slow.
But I've read this I come back to this probably once a year and reread it.
Really?
I think so, yeah.
I haven't reread it since I first bought my copies of the trades.
Yeah.
I was very pleasantly surprised. And I think maybe it is... It's because of our discussions, because of following up on, the X-Men podcast that you turned me on to. What is it?
Rachel Miles Explained the X-Men.
Yeah, I think just getting a little bit deeper into the X-Men that I have a different perspective on it now. I enjoy it more. I feel like I'm deeper involved. And like when I first read this, my friends that turned me on to it, they knew really very little about the X-Men. They enjoyed the X-Men, but they thought, oh, this is just some alternate, has nothing to do with continuity universe. And it's deeply steeped in continuity.
No, yeah, this is...
It is an in-continuity book, and none of us were really fluent in X-Men.
Right.
We just had no idea what was going on, and, it makes good sense when you know a little bit more about it, or at least as much sense as an X-Men comic book.
Yeah. And I was about to say, this is deeply rooted in continuity and nostalgia. Like this is for people who love the X-Men in the 70s and 80s, like when Claremont was writing it and people who liked Grant Morrison's run on with new X-Men, because Joss Whedon has said that this is basically just a direct sequel to Morrison's run, which I would suggest it's very good. Definitely more than 4 trades.
Yeah.
We cannot tackle it in one episode. We'd have to definitely split it up, which I'm sure we will eventually do. But yeah, it's definitely in the very first arc, it is showing Kitty Pryde coming back to the school, and it is showing, it has flashbacks to her first meeting Professor Xavier, her inappropriate flirting with Colossus.
The first time she grabbed Colossus's junk.
When she was like 13 years old, which, I guess they just did that back in the 70s and 80s.
It was just totally acceptable for a 12-year-old to blow a guy in the hall, as long as he's made out of metal.
Yeah, and this is, for those... you can read this without having any of that continuity and nostalgia and still enjoy it, because the first time I read it, I was like, I was familiar, quote unquote, with the X-Men, but I didn't know all the continuity, all the stuff. Yeah. I still liked it a lot, but the first Fastball special, this does feature the return of Colossus from the dead, which he's not been dead this whole time. He's just been imprisoned and experimented on and tortured for years and years and years.
Lucky him.
Yeah, lucky him. But Wolverine is like, how are you feeling? And Colossus says, I'm strong.
Yes.
And I've got Wolverine. I've got two words for you.
I think I'm going to start. That's how I'm going to start responding. How are you? I'm strong.
It's a pretty awesome. Like,
it's a pretty good reply.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Pretty fucking good reply.
Yeah, and then the next page is just a.
It doesn't even say fastball.
They do not say the words. It just shows Wolverine fucking flying through the air.
Yeah,
which is pretty awesome. It has a lot of those really cool, like, this is such a cool superhero thing. Like, it's an awesome, awesome superhero moment.
It's almost like Joss really gets what is good about this.
Yes, he does.
He's both a fan and a competent writer. So it's, you really get those sort of peanut butter and chocolate moments. He really brings what's good about everything together.
I think that moment, that first reunion fastball special, and when Cyclops reveals that he still has his powers at the end, near the end. Those are my two, the biggest highlights. But there's just a lot of really good stuff in this. And there's four trades, and each of them has kind of their own story, but they all end up kind of tying together near the end.
It is one big tie together arc.
Yeah.
I thought book one was all there was for the longest time. And then I'm like, there's more of this? This is awesome!
Yeah. It starts with kind of they found a cure for mutant gene. In the beginning, which the origins of how they found it gets kind of tied up into the central continuity.
Right.
The Danger Room apparently is sentient and has been, and Professor X has been enslaving it for 30 years.
I like how he's not pulling any punches. That is an incredibly terrible thing.
Yes.
It
continues the theme of Professor X is a dick.
Yeah, and it's not that's like, what I was saying, that he apparently really understands.
Yeah, it's not like that's, yeah. Then we get kind of a return of Cassandra Nova, which is the hardest to get your head around because
it's very confusing. I've read it multiple times and I'm still a little
Cassandra Nova is a weird character. She's the...
Every one of those characters is a weird fucking character.
Well, I mean, like, she's even... She's the phantom twin of Professor X. Like, she was in the womb with him, but then he, like, devoured her or something like that. It's like she didn't make it out, but she still existed as a, like, psychic force inside of him. Then separated out, and, yeah, this is her coming back, and she possesses Emma Frost, and...
Wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea that was a thing.
Exactly. It's even among all this weird stuff.
That's fucking...
It's really weird.
That's paramount strangeness there.
And she's a giant... And she's a giant slug. Which you do see this giant slug.
Did get to see that.
Yeah.
You also... And apparently she was also creating all of the Hellfire Club.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not.
All hallucinations.
None of them were real.
No,
in this book, they're all real people.
No, I think half of them are. I don't know. I think Shaw's still alive. I'm not sure. The current Hellfire Club are, like, 12-year-olds.
Good.
Truthfully. I mean, it's what they are.
I love they're preteens. I love how Miles and... I can never remember the whole thing.
Rachel.
She called Sebastian Shaw an MRA activist.
Thing. But I mean, look at him.
I know.
Look at him. It's not like it's
it's so hilarious.
But all this is tying kind of into this alien that appears in the very first arc, and he's kind of present throughout all four volumes of this planet that has been destined to be destroyed by a mutant. And they're trying to, that's kind of the root of this whole story, is that these aliens are trying to kill the X-Men or stop the X-Men because one of them is destined to destroy their planet, which is a planet rife with murder and destruction. It's
a really nice place to live.
Yeah,
it's like Detroit.
When they get there, they try and save a child or a group of, innocents, and the child just says, kill them or something, just yells for their death right away.
It literally says kill it.
Kill it. Yes. That's even better. It. Yeah.
Yes.
But this is, I think what this does best is just make a small core group and kind of divides them into identify, like Joss is good at that. He's like, this person is this, and this is how they act that out, and while he's not allowing them to be totally one-dimensional.
Yeah, he's almost, it's almost too perfect how tailored he is to this, and that the same sort of dynamics that you get from something like Firefly that's such a cult hit.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, it is.
Here's all these personalities, and they're all very dynamic, and some are going to go over here and interact, and some are going to go over here and interact. And it's the same thing. The humor is very Whedon as well.
Yes, which when you the first time reading this, I don't think you think about it.
I absolutely did.
Really?
I mean, we were on a big Whedon kick at the time.
Okay.
Me and my friends that were picking this up. Hometown buddies. You don't know any of them.
Oh.
But it just was so, I mean, one of the big hallmarks of Whedon is how he loves breaking down his powerful characters. He doesn't do it quite so much to Colossus, but he does it to White Queen. He does it to Wolverine. Really, those are the only ones in this book. He did it to the Punisher in Runaways. It's just one of those things he loves doing. It's like that moment when he likes to humiliate Jane or someone who's big and tough and masculine.
Yeah.
I mean, White Queen is, she's a dom. She's not necessarily masculine, but she's powerful, and he really loves breaking her down and humiliating her.
Yeah, I mean, among this core cast, which is Wolverine, Emma Frost, Cyclops, Kitty Pryde, Beast, and they add Colossus and a new character, which is Armor.
Yeah.
She's the new, which
this is when she was introduced.
Yeah, this is basically her first appearance. That's what this core cast is, but they add in others near the end, which is just, they're just all kind of the collected people that have worked in this arc.
There's main group and there's other.
Yeah, exactly. And those Wolverine and Emma Frost certainly are the ones who are most like have the biggest reputation about being tough, and
the big baddies,
unimpressed, detached. They can take anything.
Yeah,
and Emma Frost goes crazy, and Wolverine is
he turns into a little boy,
turns into himself when he was a child.
It's amazing. It's so good.
Yeah, when he was James Hallett.
Yes,
18 whatever.
It's actually pretty adorable.
Yeah, it's he's speaking in like Victorian and he talks about meeting Orientals and just, I think it's why it works without having to necessarily be so tied up in the continuity and all the history of the characters is that it really nails what the X-Men are and what their struggle is. Like, they're fighting things that are, they've always fought. Mm-hmm. Oppression and, like, I think that in that first arc, that scene with Wolverine and Beast fighting about Beast wanting the cure, I think that was really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Because Beast is an original X-Man.
Yes.
And Wolverine's saying, if you take it,
yes,
that's it.
Yeah.
They'll cure it. They'll want to do it to us because you'll be the one they put out in front. Beast looks like a cat. He's a giant cat person. I don't think he wants to live his life the rest of his life like that, which he does it. Now he looks kind of like a horse gorilla.
Well, I mean, that is what we all strive to be.
Yes.
We all want to be genius horse gorillas.
Yeah.
Biology has taught me anything.
Yes. What the art, Cassaday's art in this. We've read Planetary, which is also Cassaday.
Yeah. I think after reading Planetary has made me a Cassaday fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to sort of prop this book up as sort of what I liked least in modern comics, and that it's so steeped in, being based off the movies. But now it's easier for me to see the ways that Cassaday is not just simply photorealism, and the ways that he's taking liberties, and the ways that he's being a great illustrator and artist and craftsman. It almost feels like he's doing the photorealism is I don't know, just sort of a means to the end to tell a more cinematic story, but he's still a great artist. I
certainly love it.
Yeah.
I rereading it after doing the podcast and all, a lot of the backgrounds seem a little suffer from like Phil Notoism a little bit sometimes.
I don't really feel like that.
Okay.
I mean, where is it bothering you? Because it feels like a lot of rich to me.
Well, I mean,
I don't really get a lot of that.
I think the problem with it is not necessarily maybe his fault. I mean, it's in we're in the X, underneath the X, the mansion, which is just like polished silver walls.
Yes.
Which you can't, I think he does try and make them as dynamic as he can.
I feel like in areas like this, one of the things that that sort of struck me was it was something Scott Kurtz wrote about and might have been on his Twitter or something like that, about how one of his readers told him that they always thought PvP was sort of like Shakespearean drama, you know, just a bare stage with no props. You know, so the whole idea of an empty background sort of lent itself to that. And I feel like some of those moments, maybe that's the whole idea, is to be a little bleaker, a little emptier.
Well, I was about to say the same thing.
And focus on that human element. Because I don't believe Cassaday is he's very competent, and I feel like there has to be a reason more than laziness to fill out a panel or to not fill out a panel. He's clearly very capable of drawing. I mean, right there is a very like nicely activated page, you know, the stuff in the background here. And obviously the colorist is bringing in a lot of richness. We're looking at the two-page spread of the Super Sentinel thing.
From the one that destroyed Genosha.
Yes, and there's no hesitation in my mind. Cassaday can draw his friggin' butt off.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you want a paddle to feel a little bit more empty and just focus on, you know, the emotion of two talking heads.
Yeah.
You know, or you want to let the colorist earn their pay.
And I am looking at the one where they're fighting the danger room, the now sentient danger room. And a lot of that is taking place in the danger room. So it can be, it's just steel walls if nothing's happening in it.
I feel like if he wanted to fake the funk a little bit, you know, he could do it.
Yeah.
But it's, I think it's still a valid thing to say. It's an interesting point you bring up.
Well, I don't think it's as...
particular.
But that's
perfect example.
I was about to say. When
Wing fell to his death and all the students are standing around in a circle around his corpse.
Yeah, they wanted to... Look how empty this room is because he's...
And the gradient. Very subtle.
Yeah.
Going to a lighter white.
Pointing at him.
Yeah. Around Wing's body.
Yeah. And then, I mean, that's really interesting too. The way they show off the powers, Cyclops' power.
Where Cyclops blew away the Sentinel, and it's just a giant red panel.
A field of red.
Yeah, I mean, it compared to the bottom panel with all the sort of rough brushwork to show the trench where he blew it away.
Yeah.
To me, it feels like it allows your eye to rest. He's not doing like a Todd McFarlane where he's just like, I've got to draw. Like every single thing has to be full of detail. Like he's more artistic than that he'll take time and leave some white space on the page and I love this gag right here.
Oh,
when Wolverine's making paper dolls.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I just saw it and I had to stop my John Cassaday rant.
Yes.
But Jesus, it's so, I don't know. He's more evolved than an artist like that. And a lot of people react only to, you know, that I've got to fill every inch of the page with detail versus this, which is more reserved.
Yeah, and I think...
or can be reserved.
Yeah.
He's more calculated.
Yeah, and I don't think it's not as noticeable in the other arcs because there's stuff happening. There's like they're in a place that has stuff in the background. What do you think about Danger as a character?
I am almost always fascinated by AIs. Like, I think that it is an incredible, like, beautiful idea. And any AI in any work of fiction, I'm always drawn to that character. If you have any beef with Danger, which she is kind of she's a little bit of a generic baddie, I guess. I'm still very drawn to the idea because I like the idea of she's sort of this new spark of life. She goes off and starts making her own decisions. What's your thought beyond that?
No, I really like her. The design mm-hmm. looks a little...
It's a little weird.
Yeah, I don't know. It just...
Well, it's a bald woman with dreads.
Yeah, I don't...
Which I think is... I don't think that...
But I think she's interesting.
Yeah.
In the fact that, you know, she's the perfect person to fight the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's all she's done.
Yeah.
For years and years and years and years. I'm trying to find the page where she is allowing them one question. And Cyclops starts to ask her. And he starts to ask her a question. And Beast goes, explain why you chose this form. Because she can be anything.
Yeah.
She can make her form a giant beetle. Or a sphere,
yes.
Or anything. But she chose a form. Yeah, right. Cyclops goes, why do you? And then Beast cuts him off and says, explain why you've taken this form. She wants to experience... She explains it in the way that she wants to experience their combat in the way they have.
Mm.
That she's always been kind of this abstract form. Like, they could be anything. Like, laser beams or soldiers or whatever they program it to display. But for this fight, she wants to... be like they are. She wants to be their form and feel the physicality. And when she's beating them, she wants to actually feel it like they feel it. And I think that was the most interesting thing to me.
That's exactly the kind of thing about AIs that interests me. Like, when I think of one of my favorite AI characters of all time, and you know who I'm going to say.
Who are you going to say here?
I'm going to say Legion. The part where it's the decision making that the machines make on their own that's kind of so exciting about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you talk to Legion and you question him and he says, he's like, well, you have a piece of my armor on your thing. And he's like, well, I needed to repair myself. And he's like, well, why did you use my armor specifically? And Legion just looks at himself and he says, no data. I jumped out of my chair when that happened. I'm like, oh my god, that's fascinating. That's another really good moment like that. I also like how Beast is just like, shut up, Cyclops.
Yeah, I know.
Let the smart people talk.
Yeah, exactly. there's lots of moments like that where you see Beast is the smartest one.
Yeah.
So he's like, you know, and Cyclops as the leader would of course try and take the lead and try and show that he's in charge.
Mm-hmm.
But Beast immediately goes, I'm smarter. I have a better question. Let me answer. Yeah. Let me ask this one. And that's not the only character with AI, because the Super Sentinel is given, like, sentience by Danger, mm-hmm. basically, but then is then hacked to basically not be under her control anymore.
Yeah.
And it then figures out it has committed genocides in sync by itself.
I really like
just
that.
Just flies away. Mm-hmm. I need to be by myself.
I really like that moment that it doesn't really make any sense, really, when you think about an AI, because it wouldn't have the same emotions attached to murdering something. Not necessarily, but at the same time, it is pretty interesting that she appeals to its humanity.
Right.
And it flies off to sulk.
Who would you argue is the main character of this book?
Feels like Emma to me.
Okay, that's interesting. I would say Kitty.
Yeah, the two of them.
Well, they're kind of... I think you're given Kitty's perspective in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just the one that I'm the most drawn to.
And she's returned. Well, Emma's very... I mean, they're all interesting characters.
No, they definitely are.
And I think most of them show kind of some kind of growth. I mean... Wolverine, I don't think changes, but I don't.
No, Wolverine, if Wolverine's not static, the world, he's like the cosmic constant.
Yeah.
He's got to be static.
I think most of the other characters, I mean, I don't think Colossus changes very much. No. But Kitty does, Cyclops certainly does, Emma does, Beast, there's some kind of discussion about his form and if he would want a cure and all that, so that's kind of, that's interesting.
It is. To me, it really feels a lot like the story of the two of them.
But Kitty and Emma, well, they're kind of, you know, like...
They're foils.
Yeah, exactly.
In a lot of ways.
And Emma says, oh, I brought you on the team because I wanted you.
Yes.
Like, there's something, she's like, there's something inside of me.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Yes.
And I'm trying to put that behind me, but I brought you in because you can watch me. And Kitty's like, I don't need to watch you. The first day I was an X-Men, you and the Hellfire Club captured the X-Men and tortured us. I don't need to watch you. I can feel you. Is that what she says? Or smell you? And this is, I think, is kind of an important step towards where the X-Men are today. Because it shows Professor X is further being an awful person.
It's not as empty and pandering as you would think a story by Whedon being, you know?
Yeah.
He does something concise and important. And really very good.
Yes.
Like you would think that, you know, bringing in the rock star, or movie writer and television writer, thinking he'd fuck it up.
Really shows Cyclops' development towards where he is as a character today. And on all these characters, it's very interesting because they've all kind of, there's the schism, and now X-Men, now Wolverine and Cyclops are against each other. And there's all kinds of weird divisions among the X-Men. Become the NWO from 1998 WCW.
Of course, it always comes back to wrestling.
Of course it does. But I really like... This is... A lot of people go, oh, Cyclops is lame. And I just go, well, read Astonishing X-Men. And he's definitely not lame in this book.
He's almost always... he's kind of the most human character. Like, him... I love him and Emma in this book. You know, it's amazing. Like one of my favorite parts, but I think it's because he's so human, you know, that he just sort of comes off as a little boring.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have like spider legs growing out of his chest or, you know, he just wears sunglasses. That's his thing.
I wear sunglasses.
He's a guy that wears sunglasses.
He's Corey Hart. He wears his sunglasses at night.
He does.
Yeah. But it gives him like a chance to shine, and I think this book does it well, and I think that's the problem with most Cyclops. Like when they don't write him well. They write him just like he's a boring leader. Like he's like annoying.
I'm Scott Summers. I like homework and vegetables.
Yeah, exactly.
I fucking love that quote.
Yeah,
he really gets it.
Yeah, and that a leader is someone who makes tough choices, and I think that's when Cyclops is most interesting, and that's in this book. He makes tough choices.
Yeah.
He makes the choices no one else can or will. And I think that's interesting that in the third volume, which is when all these characters kind of get challenged, get torn down, which is, it's called Torn. That the thing that is Cyclops is that he is, his whole life is, they levy that he's just chosen not to choose anything. He just has been, nothing affects me. And you're not special and all that. You're the leader because no one else.
Yeah.
No one else. You're not as special enough to be anything else. And I think that he shows that, you know, that tells a story about why he is a good. It makes him interesting.
It does.
Yeah. Well, there's so
now,
much
now
stuff.
Now I want to read it again.
I read this. Like I said, I read this once a year, and every year I'm like, wow, I remember why I like this so much.
Yeah.
It's very, very good. The art is beautiful. And for X-Men fans, it's
one of the best
strong
X-Men stories, bar absolutely none.
Yeah, if you want a modern X-Men story,
this
is what I point people at.
Yeah.
Because it's accessible, it's amazing, and it leads into modern continuity if you want to continue on and to read stuff. And you can read Grant Morrison's run as well. I was going to ask you, you kind of mentioned this before, but... I've heard people... I have not watched Buffy.
Yeah.
I know you've watched some.
A little bit.
Yeah. and some people criticize this, is that they just go, oh, well, this character is this character. They just make clear parallels to other characters that are in Buffy. Like, this is this, and this is this, and this is this.
Almost all characters, particularly Marvel characters, they're paradigms.
Right.
You know, they're archetypes.
Mm-hmm.
It is asinine to say, oh, this is the big tough guy, and this is the... It's, that's stupid. I mean, yeah, you can say that, and maybe you could plug in the story, but that's the way fucking writing works. And these... it's a superhero story, and almost all of these characters are really old. So the fact that they're archetypal, pointing that out is...
It's more like Buffy came from this than the other way around. It doesn't matter, because they're all,
you don't need
they're
to,
all the same.
You don't need to point out that the Emperor character has no clothes at Emperor's Burlesque show. It just is what it is. You okay. just have to accept it.
Yeah, I agree.
So whatever idiot said that, you're an idiot.
I doubt they listen to our podcast.
I'm going to go make them.
You can find who it was. Some random person.
Of course
person,
I can.
Some random person on the internet that I've never met. I really
I'm going to open up my browser. I'm going to Google, and then I'm going
to
find them.
Okay, Google. Once you get to Google through Google, then you can search it out. So yeah, I think that'll wrap us up. You know, next week we're going to do Phonogram Volumes 1 and 2. It's Karen Gillan and Jamie McKelvey. They're currently working on Wicked and Divine. Also, they did the most recent run of Young Avengers. They pair up all the time. So I'm gonna go downstairs, and I'll be right back. I think Kim's calling me.
Wait, who's Kim?
Should I answer now, or should I answer when I come back?
I don't care.
Kim is my robot maid.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's is Kim an acronym?
It is. It's really technical. I don't bother listening. I never bother learning it.
Okay.
Eric thinks it's funny for some reason. I don't know why.
It's a Korean imported machine.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll be right back.
Well, I'll just sit here and not pet the cat. That's weird. Where'd that come from? Come in, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, brother. Appreciate that you gotta invite me in. I don't want to come in uninvited.
You're not a vampire, are you, Macho Man?
No, but it's just rude.
Okay.
It's just rude to come in without invitation.
That is...
I was not born in a barn.
That is true, if nothing, you are a gentle macho man.
I found the comic you left me.
I forgot I did that.
Yeah. It looks really strange.
Strange?
Yeah, you had left me, like, a Punisher book. I remember that. It had a guy riding a camel. And then there was an X-Men comic with a weird, creepy guy in a tux on the front cover. But this one has, like, this swamp guy. And a,
is it called Swamp Guy?
No, he's the Man Thing, but he hangs out in swamps. And the Himalayas, apparently, because he's in the Himalayas for some reason in this book.
That didn't say. He just is.
He's in there. I can show you, man. Look, it's the Himalayas. He has a woman in his arms.
He's riding is it a helicopter or a plane?
It's a plane.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, plane. I rode on those back in the day. Went everywhere in the plane. Superstars got plane rides. I was a superstar!
Just spread your wings, Macho.
But then they got this guy. Is he? I don't want to be offensive, but is he gay? He wears kind of fruity clothes.
Aren't you wearing, like, pink frills?
Touché.
But you can't give a man too much shit about being flamboyant.
No, I guess not. But his dude, he's like a magician. Calls himself Strange.
How do you rank that on the Macho Man gimmick scale there?
It's not bad, but I don't know how we'd reproduce it in a wrestling ring. He shoots stuff from his hands like a Swireworks, but that's all kind of dangerous. fire codes or a hazard man.
You don't want to set yourself on fire, huh?
I happened once. Pyro, not a joke. You take that guy's advice seriously. But the strange guy is fighting some other dude who's apparently evil. And he's enslaved this swamp guy. Who has a weird face. Man, look at that face.
That's pretty weird.
Oh, yeah, something's wrong with him. He should get that checked out.
What does he look like?
He looks like the swamp thing, but with, like, snouts on his face, like an elephant, like a trunk hanging off, like tentacle monsters. His red eyes, and he touches people, they burn. They're afraid. Which is pretty cool. Wish I had that power. I would touch Hulk Hogan, because he knows I'm afraid of either.
So why didn't anyone ever use that in the ring? It's like their move.
I think Kane does right now.
Does he?
He's the devil's favorite demon, don't you know? Seriously, he's from hell and gave babe.
It sounds plausible.
Yes. He has fire. Oh, yeah.
It's not all choke slams, huh?
Not all. Though he does use choke slams.
Probably.
They're important.
I can't live without them.
But then this thing is possessed by the evil dude. The swamp guy, and he fights Strange. And then he drowns him. So I guess this is the end of that story, and Doctor Strange never comes back, right?
He's probably just dead forever.
Because in the last panel, he's floating in water face down, and I assume that he's dead. Or is this a twist, and he comes back to life in the next issue?
No, I think he's dead.
He's dead?
Forever. Yeah, it's just he's only in that book.
So you're telling me that the bad guys win, man?
You know, once. Sometimes the heels have to win.
You do not understand the proper wrestling storylines, then. I thought I knew you.
Really, we're all strangers, Macho.
But this comic book was written by Chris Claremont.
Oh, really?
You didn't know that? You bought this!
It was an impulse.
You just looked at the cover and saw a big, giant, glowing orange guy. Thought, Macho Man should read this comic.
Well, you do make me think of orange people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Man-Thing. So this comic should just be called Man-Thing Strangles Doctor Strange.
It's pretty concise, though.
There's lots of advertisements in this comic.
Any good ones?
I don't think they sell any of this stuff anymore.
So no?
I do like this Hubba Bubba Gum ad. Because it has a young man in a western stance blowing a bubble.
Pretty swell hat he's got.
Ooh, yeah. 10 gallon, I would reckon.
At least
10 gallons, maybe 15.
You never sold me bubble gum, did you?
No, only Slim Jims.
Seems like kind of a natural accompaniment.
You snap into them. You snap into Slim Jims.
All the time. I'm going to do it in just a little bit.
That's good to hear. Why are you drinking from a hot rod glass? Why not the Macho Man?
Didn't have one.
They don't make any glasses with my face on them.
I haven't seen one. There was not one.
I don't really have anything against Hot Rod. He's had his problems. Much like all of us.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
We're all fighting that hard battle.
It's drugs and alcohol and wrestling impacts.
We gotta numb that pain somehow, Macho.
Yeah. I would say this comic is weird.
Or strange.
Oh, I see what you did there! Oh, yeah, that's some good wordplay. You should write for the WWE! They could use someone like you in their ranks. Oh, yeah.
I don't think Bischoff would
Bischoff allow. Doesn't work there anymore, bro.
Oh, man, I didn't know that. Well, maybe they won't take a risk on another Eric. Shows what I know. I'm not prepared.
Macho Man doesn't know what to think about that. Oh,
I'm sorry.
No, doesn't even know Eric Bischoff doesn't work for the WWE anymore.
Maybe in my heart of hearts, I knew.
I think it's time for me to go. I gotta go track down Hulk Hogan, sell some scores. Saw that he was back on television. WWE hasn't called me to put me back on television. I don't know why. Oh yeah.
I think you know it's about the Hotep situation.
I know. Why don't they know that? Do I have to call them myself?
Phone works both ways, Macho.
That hurts, but it's true.
It is.
Oh yeah. But thank you for this comic book. Please leave me another. It's the only reading material I have.
I look forward to crawling up to your attic again.
Oh yeah, Macho Man is out! Oh.
So, apparently she wanted. Apparently Kim wanted to know if I wanted to throw something out. Did I miss anything while I was gone?
Nah.
Nothing?
Okay. Nothing.
That's good. I think that'll bring this episode to a close. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. All new episodes there, streaming and downloadable. We're on iTunes. Search for us there, Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You find us, and only us. Please, if you like us, subscribe. Leave us good reviews. Good reviews get us more listens, more people, more attention. We like all those things.
Attention. Not as much as we like you.
That's true. We like our listeners the most. You can find us on Stitcher. We're on Stitcher. I need to remember to keep saying we're on Stitcher. So if you use Stitcher, you can find us there. We are on Twitter at HBC Hour. We're on Tumblr, handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. Quite a mouthful.
That's right.
Eric's making some kind of, he's going to make a joke about being a mouthful. And then there were probably other places you can Google us. But you can also Google. And then find us as well.
Google, and then you Google us.
Yeah, we're on Twitter and I'm on Twitter and Tumblr. It's at Mixmaster Shield. It's MixmasterCreel. Eric, where can they find you online?
My God, it's almost like you can go to freewillunlimited.com and look at my portfolio. And without even Googling Google, you can put in your URL bar. You can go to ericzgoodnight.com. Look at most of the things I get up to online. And you can tweet at me. Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR Bad Example.
So, folks, until next time, have a good one.
Rock and roll.